Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I do hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 66. Today, I had on a YouTuber named Brendan, who is, his YouTube channel is called Master Talk. Basically, what he does with his YouTube channel, he helps people overcome their fear of speaking in public, so they can better use their voice to communicate their ideas to the world. Got to say, he's a very interesting chap to speak to, and yeah, I've got to say, he might be the equivalent of a top 10 researcher if this was the world of CrossFit. Yeah, so please enjoy the show, have a great day, and yeah, have a great one. Peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 66. Today I have, I'm very honored to have Brendan from Master Talks. Well, what could I say? This guy is a busy chap indeed, going from here, there, everywhere. He basically helps people, how can I say it? Master Talk helps one unique goals. I am messing that up. You know what? Rather than me saying that, I'm going to pass it over to him. He'll be able to tell you what we can, like, what he does. How are you, sir? How are you?
Very good, Biwa. Thanks for having me on, brother. It's great to be on.
It's good having you on. Yeah, Master Talks. Yeah, it's a YouTube channel, from what I gather, which you upload once a week. What made you decide to do Master Talks? How did this sort of come around?
Absolutely. So when I was in university, I used to do these things called case competitions. So think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age, you know, were watching sports or playing in them, I didn't either. I was watching the University of Florida, the University of Warwick in the UK, give presentations, evaluate them. And that was my life. So suffice to say, in university, I presented over 500 times, coached a bunch of people on public speaking. And then when I started working in the field of consulting, you know, I asked myself the next question, which was, how do I use my time and expertise to make an impact in the world? And that's when the idea for the YouTube channel came about, because a lot of the communication stuff on YouTube, frankly, sucks. So I want to make a difference there.
Right. Well, I like, there are some people out there which communicate very well. But yes, there is one or two channels, millions of them, which might not hit the mark. Yeah. So basically, was this something you just discovered at university, or was it something you discovered before then?
So I knew I was okay at public speaking before university. Like, I was good, but I wasn't like amazing or anything. But what really helped me refine the craft was definitely in university. So just to give more context here, there are 8,000 business school students at my university, but only 80 people are in this competition program. So we're talking like the top of the top. So when you're up against people who are like really, really good, it pushes you to do better. Good example. It's not the same comparison, but it's like Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls, right? Yeah. Like if MJ is playing on the team, you got to be better. And I wasn't the MJ. I was like the garbage person who started. So I wanted to get better. I wanted to do better, be better. And it pushed me to be one of the best speakers out there. So yeah, it's definitely case competitions that pushed me to really challenge myself to do better. Cause we're up, it's like the business Olympics. So we're up against like 13 other universities and we have to win and to win, you have to speak really well.
I see. And like what was one of the, say, more interesting topics you had to cover out of one of the 500 competitions you were involved in?
Yeah. So there's this one competition I did that was like a packaging company. So basically what they asked, and this was the challenge, is that in Europe, you know, let's say you buy cream, like shelf stable cream, that's what they call it. So let's say you like cream in your coffee. But the issue is in Canada and the US, nobody buys their cream shelf stable. So let's say you go to a supermarket, you want to, you get cream and then you put it in the coffee and then you drink it. Mm. But in Canada, we only buy refrigerated cream. So the challenge of the case was, how do we sell cream that's on the shelf that's just as good to Canadians who don't want to buy that? So it's a very difficult case, because you have to convince a Canadian to say, I know you're used to buying cream in the fridge, but you want to buy it on the table. Because when you're Canadian, you look at it, you're like, ew, that's gross. That cream is like expired and stuff. So really hard case. And we presented that directly to the president of the company. And I was like 19 years old at the time or something. So it was very nerve-wracking, but it was a lot of fun.
Right. So what did you say to sort of like push forward your argument? Come on now. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way that we did this, so we had this weird idea. We just said, put hockey on the packaging. Because if you put hockey on the packaging, it reminds you of winter. So it makes Canadians think that, oh, like this is actually cold, right? But the reason we flopped, once again, I'm not perfect. The reason we flopped was because the mom usually makes the buying decision in the household. And the mom doesn't care about hockey. But it was a good idea. It's just, like, it was creative. But it doesn't work because it doesn't appeal to the mom. So we flunked. But we still got third place. But, you know, it was interesting. Interesting thing for a 19-year-old to do, right? Presenting to the president of the company who's like 50.
Well, like, you know what? That, like, presenting, like, doing presentations at the age of 19, like, that sets you up hugely for the sort of outside world, because you think about the amount of positions which rely on presentations. And let's just say there are times where you see death by PowerPoint, or you just get put into this presentation and you have no idea what's going on. And neither does the person who's actually given the presentation has no clue about what they're saying. That must have been set you up quite nicely for the future, I've got to imagine.
No, it's definitely helped. And the reason why a lot of these people do these, because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, why would anyone put them through this torture? Like, it's just crazy. Like, you're presenting and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
The reason why is because most of the people who compete in competitions end up getting the top jobs out of business school. So think about bankers on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Think about consultants at McKinsey and all of these other consulting companies. Think about working at a big four accounting firm. Even if the audience might not know all these jobs, most of the people who get their jobs do competitions. So I initially competed for that reason. Because if I could speak to senior vice presidents as a 20-year-old, they also sponsor the competitions to get talent. So most of my friends, when we graduated, we had like 3 job offers and we just picked the company we wanted.
Nice, nice. So like with that, was that when you were 19 and you did that presentation, was that just for the first year of like a university? Was that the sort of pinnacle of it all? Like, you know what I mean? You battled through several fights here, there, and everywhere, and then it was like the final boss level and there you were. Or was there sort of other sort of competitions on the way which you found either challenging, interesting, or
absolutely. No one actually asked me this type of question, so I like that. But I think the idea is, so at the beginning, so that was a really difficult case. I did that in my first semester of university, where I presented directly to the president. I was just like, oh, geez, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But the biggest competition that pushed me the most was a competition called JDC Central. So once again, I'll give context here, because most people just won't believe this is a thing.
Okay.
So people in Canada, okay, 13 different universities, we take a bus. 500 people, we all take a bus to one of the universities we host. So let's say it's in Toronto or something. It's in like a city. And then in Toronto, all of these 500 people gather and it's a huge competition against all of them. But it's not just academics, which is the cases that we're talking about right now. There's also a sports team. There's a debate team. There's a charity team. And out of all of that, based on the combination of all of the points, the university is crowned the champion of that competition. So we would spend months preparing for that competition and we would hire for that competition 8 months in advance. So just to give you an idea, let's say it's April 2020. Okay. Just to use this year as an example, recruitment starts for next year's teams. And that goes through like a 4-month hiring process where 400 people apply to join the program, and 80 people get in. So we turned down 80% of the people, and 20% of the people get in. And then from that 20, we handpick the best people to go to JDC Central. And then from there, in September, there was a whole university class dedicated just for cases. So you have a teacher who only does cases, and it counts as credits for a university. Mm. And if you win at the competition, you get an automatic A+. That's how it works. Yeah, it's crazy. So then within that class was like 24, 28 people. And we all practiced together for 4 months. That doesn't just mean once a week. It's cute. Christmas, you don't get to see your family. Oh, New Year's Eve, forget it. Like, yeah. It's done. Literally in the interview, if you go, yeah, you know, I'm planning on taking holidays, we just look at you and go, yeah, you're not a part of this. It's like, it's literally like professional sports. Mm. You go, you want to see your family on Christmas? Get out of here. Yeah, don't compete with us. And the reason we were so strict was because the competition, okay, you could see your family like one day, but you couldn't go for like 2 weeks on vacation.
Hi, bye.
Yeah, literally. Hi, get back to work. I the last three Christmases before I graduated, I was at university. I wasn't with my family. But that's because I don't celebrate Christmas, so I had an easy time there. But you get the idea. So the reason was because the competition was the first week of January. So on December 25th, you're 12 days away from the competition that you spent. It's like going to the Olympics for 4 years. You've trained for 4 years. And then a week before, you're like, oh, you know, I'm going to take the last month off. Like, get out of here. Are you kidding me? So it was easy for us. Because we would tell people in the final round, we would go, this is the expectation of the program. Mm. Do you want it? And if we see them, because I recruited the students one of the years, if we see them go, oh, you know, I'm not sure, automatically out. I don't care if you get an A on the case. You just don't have what it takes. Mm. So those were the competition that pushed us the most, because we put in so much effort, way more than all the other universities. Like, most universities probably practiced 5 cases, 7 cases. Mm. Each team in our delegation, 25 minimum. Minimum. And these are not like just, oh, let's present for 20 minutes. No, it's we crack a case for 3 hours. Mm. A senior executive from a company, instead of having dinner with their families, comes to the university and grills us. And we did that 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah. Right? When you say crack a case, like, what goes behind cracking a case? What does that mean? Because, like, you say crack a case. I think I have an idea, but, yeah, what does that mean?
Absolutely. Happy to share. So let's use McDonald's here as an example. Okay. So let's say McDonald's comes up to us, the CEO says, the CEO isn't always there. That's not the point, but the case is like that.
Yeah.
So they go, you know, Maui, you know, all of these healthy, conscious people, they're all eating salads. They don't want to go to McDonald's anymore. What do we do, brother? What do we do? How do we get them back in our stores? So what happens is, this is what we call a business problem. McDonald's is losing a lot of customers, and they're asking us, the consultant, to figure out a solution. So, you know, like new salad options or things like that. So in 3 hours, this is what we have to come up with. Slides. We have to read the case. That's usually 10, 15 pages in length. We have to find risks, find a solution, do a financial statement, underline all the more important cases. At the end of the 3 hours, we have to present it right away. No, there's no like, hey, you want to practice for 30 minutes? No. The second the 3 hours is over, if you talk, you get eliminated. Like, you get eliminated on the spot. They see you talk after the 3 hours, because everyone gets 3 hours, you're automatically eliminated. So somebody comes in, like a prompter. This is the actual competition, not the practice runs. We kind of have, it's by faith. We assume you're doing it. So at the end of the 3 hours, proctor comes in and says, stop talking. And if you say one word, they eliminate you on the spot. Right? And universes get eliminated, though.
Oh, the whole, okay. Yeah, wow.
Say nothing. And then they take you to the judging room, and then you present. So that's what a case practice looks like. So I cracked probably hundreds of those types of competitions, and I competed personally in 60 of them. So that gives you a bit more insight as to why a 24-year-old kid knows so much about public speaking. It's because I learned multiple decades of communication in 3 years. Really? I started coaching CEOs when I was 23.
Yeah, no, there's part of me which isn't surprised that, like, you're saying that, because just by listening to you saying about these cases, doing 25 cases compared to 5, that other like institutions did. Like, plus doing, when you're cracking a case, doing that for 3 hours, like the way I, like from what you've said and the way I understand it, it is a high level of analytical information which you got to pull from like that case to present, like, well, to present a winning narrative. Like, I can't, like, argument it to me, when I say, when you got a winning argument, that kind of, to me, sort of has too much sort of negative narrations, like a winning narrative. So you got, okay, this is the reason why you want to bring in your, like, how you're going to win new customers to get people into McDonald's eating our new healthy cinnamon bun, blah, 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 blah. And this is which demographic, and then going through this, and like, depending on how much information is there, but to be able to crunch that in a 3 hour space of time. And like, even if you're covering that as one member of the team, you've then got to relay that information, go, this is the reason why I think these points would be really good, or support something I just heard you say, and take it from there. Not easy, not easy at all. Dear God, nasty, nasty, nasty. Oh no, I don't envy you, man. I don't envy you at all.
And here's the best part, dude. I loved every second of it. Yelling at the students, coaching them at midnight in my sweatpants and saying, you call this a presentation? How about you go back and not compete ever again? Right? Like, it was just the best. I was like a basketball coach for a sport nobody cared about except for me and everyone around. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Ah, oh, excellent. Excellent. That must have set you up quite nicely to go out into the real world. Like, a reason why I ask about the real world is like, yeah, just to sort of get a little bit more sort of context about you've, like, where you've come from, how things have developed, and yeah, up to where you are in today. But yeah, so when you left university, like, did you start to use these skills immediately, or was it a case of, you're like, I've got these skills, I have a certain set of skills, I'm just waiting to use it? What happened?
You got it. So you're right. Exactly. I started using them immediately. So what most case competitors end up doing is they either start working as a banker on Wall Street, you know, in those types of jobs. Mm-hmm. So those are like 100-hour work weeks, right? That's why they like hiring the case competition kids, because that's what we do, right? We just work that way anyways. And the other part of it was to be a consultant. So this is at companies like McKinsey, BCG, Bain, IBM, and things like that. So I was fortunate that I ended up getting an offer at IBM to work in their consulting division. And I was one of the few, and this is what case competition does for you. I was one of the few people who got hired with only a bachelor's. So I was the youngest consultant there, right? And I still work there. I love my job there. But the advantage that it gives you is I can talk as if I'm a senior executive. So when I was in my interview rounds and I was asking them questions, they would be shocked because there's this kid who's asking about the business and how it runs, because I understood the business because I just did so many cases. Mm. So what happens with a lot of these case competition delegates is once they go into the real world, they're just productivity machines, because we know all the, because to save time in the case, we need to know all the Excel spread, like shortcuts, like control alt down to move the rows in this way, like slides. A lot of my colleagues, like a lot of my case comp friends, do slides without a mouse. They just do this. It's crazy. I can't do that. I'm not that good. But they make slides without a mouse. It's insane. Like, they're just like, shh, and oh, because it's all shortcuts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what in the world? So obviously we're 10 times more productive than the person who just graduated with the degree. So we get promoted way faster. And here's the secret, by the way. That's why a lot of our coaches are senior executives. Why? Because all of them are graduates of the program 10, 15 years ago. So they go on to work in the real world. They rise up the ranks really quickly. And they go, well, I want to give back to the program. So then they become coaches. So it's a circle.
Yeah.
Right. So now the program's been around for 25 years. So that's why a lot of our coaches are like very senior level executives. So just really crazy smart people. So when you start on day one, this is what happens on day one. Everyone's got this big ego. Because yeah, they made it into the program. They're one of the 80 people. And they go, they're like, oh yeah, I'm the best, I'm the greatest. And then they do one practice. And they get and that would happen to me. I had a big ego too when I started. It takes one practice. Yeah. And then the senior executive is literally just laughing at you. He's like, you call this a presentation? I thought you got picked for this program, and you're just sitting there like, oh, jeez. So yeah, you learn fast, man. You learn fast.
Oh man. Like, this is the thing that sounds brutal, but to me, it set you up tremendously for your next stage, because damn, whew, I would no, myself, I know I would be like, yeah, no, it's time for me to go to bed. I need a rest.
that doesn't work with us.
Yeah,
I rest now. My life's a lot easier these days because I sleep 8 hours today. Back in the day, 8 hours, forget it. I was coaching all of the teams. Uh-huh. Right? So I was living at school practically.
So you would say your life is infinitely easier being in the realms of IBM.
Oh yeah. Like, the work is like, for example, I was working Sunday night yesterday to pass an exam, right? And I only studied for 2 days. Most people study for like 2-3 weeks for that exam. I just looked at the book, memorized everything. Because of case, you're just like really fast. And you go into the exam, you're like, pass, done. And then you're just like, and then you go back to these interviews and stuff. It's not a, yeah.
Yeah, yes, I done. I know. So you would definitely recommend, if anyone, like, do case, and it will help set, like, if you manage to get through the whole program, it will set you up for a myriad of things down the line.
Absolutely. And one thing, you're based in the UK, right?
Yes, I am.
Are you?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of universities in the UK that also have case. One example is the University of Warwick that I've had the chance of competing against and meeting.
Yeah.
And they have an amazing case program. So I think it's about picking, and it's very international. You got schools in Germany, Singapore, all that stuff that fly out to different competitions. So definitely, there's definitely a, if you're in business school and that's what you want to do, highly recommend it. That case experience is worth 10 times, if not 100 times, not even exaggerating the number, than my degree.
Mm.
100%.
Excellent. No, I'm loving that, right? Because this is the thing. When I hear what you're talking about, case, I think, oh, the debate team, but it's a lot deeper than that. No, but that's what, like, if you explained it to, like, just some everyday person, about you're talking about the debate team, and you're like, no, it's more complicated than that, because you've got to go deeper and you've got to do this, and, like, there will be some people which might get lost with it and go, okay, so it's not like the debate team. No, forget the debate team, it's something different. But, but this is the thing. Learning all of this and basically putting that into practice, it's one of those things where you went, yeah, I wasn't in, like, I've got my position and I didn't go to business school, because, like, much of that would be a case of people going into doing an MBA. Then once they've got their MBA, then they most probably be doing your position as a hire consultant and stuff like this. But it helped you skip all of that. Because you were doing quite an intensive period of, like, study, research, and picking up techniques, which, like, is setting you up now nicely to, like, tackle the world of YouTube as well. Why YouTube? Why?
It's interesting that you set that context pretty well. I like how you kind of built it up to that. So, it's interesting that you say that, because in my life, if you would ask me, not like 10 years ago, like 2-3 years ago, maybe, if you would ask me what I wanted, I would have responded youngest senior partner at McKinsey or IBM or things like that. That's all I wanted. I want to be senior level executive, make $500,000 a year, and just live my life. Why? Because I grew up in poverty and I wanted to give my mother a great opportunity. And I loved working with really smart people. That's all I wanted, right? And I got what I wanted, right? I got that job.
Yeah.
Right? So I was set up really well, and I still am set up really well, because I'll be a senior consultant at 25 and I can go after partner. For those who don't know what partner is, think of Suits, like the show. Harvey Specter, right, who's the main character of the show, he's a partner at a law firm. So how that structure works is, not only is he the one of the senior executives there, but he takes a profit from all of the services that they sell. That's why Harvey Specter is so rich in the show. So for me, that was my path. Maui. That was what I was going to do. I was like, okay, I'm going to be a partner by 29, 30. And then, you know, just enjoy the high life, being the top 1% of all income owners and just live my life. And that still would have happened if we just rewinded the tape 30 years. So if I was born 30 years ago, that's exactly what I would have done.
Mm.
But because of the time that I lived in, because of the nature of the world that it is today, I got really lucky. And the idea for MasterTalk came at the right place at the right time. So here's what happened. I was in my last year of university. This is after I'd, you know, won countless competition, coached a bunch of people. But there's one question that kept coming up in those 3 years. The question was, how did you learn how to speak, Brendan? How are you so good at, like, how are you doing this? And the honest truth
was
I didn't know. I didn't have money to afford a speech coach. I never did Toastmasters. I just was so obsessed with, but I could never explain it. So John would come up to me, Julie, everybody would always ask me, how'd you learn how to speak? Do you use resources? But in my head, I would always say, why do you need resources? Isn't communication like the easiest thing in the world? But after the 10th person came up to me, I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. So anyways, I ended up getting the job at IBM. So I had a couple of months before I started working.
Yeah.
So in those couple of months, because I had nothing to do, really. I didn't have any money, right? Because I was still poor. So I just said, oh, you know, why don't we just... So the competition ended in January at 3 months. So I went on YouTube one day. I was 22 at the time. And, you know, I opened up my laptop and I started watching YouTube videos of a bunch of the, you know, the people who had like 50,000 subscribers, 100,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
I'll communicate just to see what was out there. Oh, Jesus Christ. I was vomiting in my mouth the full 10 hours. I was like, this is terrible. I would use more profane words, but let's keep it PG. Yeah. You know, I was like, this is terrible. I was like, one of the guys, I won't name obviously, had a PhD in communication, probably.
Yeah.
And this is his video on how to manage vocal tones. Sounds something like this. Hi everyone, today we're gonna learn how to manage vocal tones. I was like, dude, you don't know how to manage your own vocal tones.
Well, you know what? That sounded inspirational to me. I am motivated, I am charged up, and yeah, I'm ready.
Fair enough. I'll send you the link so you can go watch his videos instead of mine. But anyways,
I'm gonna take my podcast to the next level.
You're very good at facilitating conversation. But anyways, so I spent the day, and frankly, I was just frustrated. I was like, this is terrible. Someone should do something about it. And then I never thought of it. I was like, I'm going to start IBM in 3 months. I don't care.
Yeah. But
a couple of days went by, and I started thinking about it, and I was like, why don't I just make videos? And I was like, I've been like, no, that's a dumb idea. I'm going to be like a senior executive. I don't want to risk anything. I don't want to risk my bread. But after a couple of days, I just said, "Ah, what the heck?" So I went in my basement, my mother's basement, more specifically, for everyone on record. Took out my phone, no lighting. Put it on those little Twinkie things. Bought like for like $30. Once again, no money, people. Put it in front, and I just recorded my first video, and it was horrible. And it's still up for people if they want to see it. It's horrible. I was just like, "Yeah, my name's Brendan," and blah blah blah. And then, you know, to keep myself busy before I started working, I just kept making one every week.
Mm.
Then after like 3 months or something, I had what, like 10 subscribers? Like nobody, it's a stupid idea, right, frankly. But what happened was a lot of the people that I knew in my competitions kept coming up to me and said, hey, Brent, I've been watching those videos of yours. I go, really? What? I thought it was a joke, honestly. Yeah. I was like, watching this video. And then one of the girls goes, no, this is actually really useful. I've never heard of any of these tips before. That's when it clicked. But even when it clicked, I still was like, come on. Me? A YouTuber? Is this a joke? I'm supposed to be a senior level executive and like go like mint a bunch of money and go live a life. But what happened when I started working, and I still love my job. I'm one of the few people who really loves working at IBM. But the thing what happened with me was I just asked myself the following question. Do I just want to be a partner and die? Is that all I want to do? And I just asked myself the hard questions. And then after a couple of months of doing Master Talk, because I just kept posting every week.
Yeah.
Well, naturally, I just kept getting better on camera. And after 8 months, I was really good on camera. And then I just said, oh, I think I have a mission here. And that's when Master Talk turned into, you know, calling and all that stuff. But it didn't start that way.
Mm.
And then I went professional. I never looked back.
Yeah, like this is the thing. One of the things I like about what you're saying there, like you had the idea and you thought, come on now, what am I doing? But the whole thing, I think what stops a lot of people is they have the idea, but they don't actually take any action upon that idea. And look, no one, like anyone who wants to like step into something new and think, ah, yes, I shall be perfect, I shall be amazing, like, look at me, I'm the best of the best of the best. No, it doesn't work like that. And like, you know what I mean? You started with your phone, a $30 tripod more than likely, and then you even said it yourself. You most certainly would say it right now. Yo, yeah, it wasn't good, I sucked. But you continued, you carried on, and now you've got God knows how many videos you've got up and running right now. And you've got over 38,000 views at this present time on your YouTube channel, which let's just say when you started it, you were like, going, if 10 people showed up, I'd be happy with that. You know what I mean? And you're adding real value. Because one of the things also I would say is when people talk about communication, everyone assumes communication is easy to do because we talk every day and we have conversations and everything like that. But let's just say many of our conversations are nothing but smoke and fluff. And if you're trying to convey some important information, that's not an easy thing, trying to sort of captivate and keep someone's attention, knowing when to speak, knowing when to stop, knowing when to sort of bring emphasis to a sentence. Yeah, you know better than I, but you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And I think the idea was, I think one thing that you mentioned that I really liked was this whole idea of having a bias for action. Mm. So what was the difference between me and every other consultant who decided not to do a side hustle, who just decided to stick to the norm and do the job? Mm. Big difference is actually a lot simpler than you think. I'm not smarter than them. I'm not more special or more important. I'm more insane. I have a quote that I live by, that I've always lived by. I just never thought it would end up me being a YouTuber, but it's just my philosophy in life is the following. Be insane or be the same. If you want to be like everyone else, you go ahead and do that. But if you want to do something different, if you want to do something unique, if you want to do something important, you need to act a bit more insane, because all the great people who make a difference are innately insane to most of the population. But insanity doesn't mean being in a mental asylum. It means questioning every rule. So for me, getting a job in consulting was insane in the beginning. For me, to you, to most people, that's regular, it's just a job. To me, that was insane because I didn't have any business connections. Mm-hmm. I had an oversized suit from Sears, that bankrupt company now, that I paid $100 for, that I used at my prom. I knew nobody in the business world. I thought PricewaterhouseCoopers, which is a huge accounting firm, very prestigious company that I had the opportunity of interning at, I thought it was a water bottling company. I had no idea. I came in my first information session in sweatpants. Everyone else was in suits. And I just walked in and I was like, oh, they don't sell water bottles. You're like, ooh. Do you have any sample water bottles for me? The chick is like, what are you?
You have come to the wrong place, sir. Please exit. It's like, that's right. Okay.
So I was like one of those drunks in the back, except I wasn't drunk, just lost, really. But anyways, that's the thing. So to me, getting a job at Price Waterhouse was like, oh my gosh. So when I got my internship there, my first job that I got, I was like, wow, like I can't believe this. And then after getting a job at IBM or McKinsey, all these companies, was insane. 1 in 100 people get a job there. How is that going to be me? Mm. And then I got the job. And now it's being a YouTuber. So how do I make that shift? The shift is simple. Every point of my life that's always stayed consistent is I've always challenged and I always ask myself the hard questions about life that nobody else is willing to ask. I'll give you an example. Super simple that I guarantee you nobody who's listening has thought of. Why are we saving up for retirement at 65 if Steve Jobs died at 56? How does that make any sense? Kobe Bryant died at 41. Nobody has even pondered that simple question. Or another one I can give you. If you had all the money in the world, how would you spend your time? Dude, so many people answer, I would travel. And then I would say, okay, smart, you know, whatever. I don't want to cuss too much. But anyways, you know, smart, whatever. What are you going to do? Travel for 40 years and then die? And they're going to say, well, no. And I say, exactly. So then what do you do? What time are you waking up? Who are you waking up with? Are you waking up with anybody? Is there a dog in the house? Are you even in a house? Are you changing countries? Nobody asks themselves these questions. They stay on the line. Mm-hmm. Whereas me, and that's the only habit that matters, but I get that question a lot. Oh, should I like exercise more? Let's move the exercise for a second. Let's forget about the yoga. Let's forget about the yogurt for like 2 minutes. And let's focus on the following exercise. Two in particular. One is write your own funeral speech. Nobody does that. Right. If you write your own eulogy, it'll give you a lot more clarity on what you want to do with the rest of your time. And number two is spend 10 minutes a day asking yourself a hard question. Why am I here? What am I doing this for? Who am I trying to protect? What do I actually stand for? Because I asked all those questions, I was able to pull myself out of the matrix and said, this IBM thing is great. I love my job and I would stay there my whole life, honest to God. But I think I meant to do better things in life than just work.
Yeah, no, loving that. Like, I remember watching a story about Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett, he has a private plane and a pilot of him who's been with him for years. And Warren Buffett one day turns to him and goes, you've been with me, you've seen what I've done and everything like this. How comes you're not out there doing your own thing and, like, you know what I mean? Seeking out your own goals and like making it happen. He goes, no, I like what I'm doing and everything like this. And it's like, yeah, I'm fine. He goes, like, is there anything you want to do? Like, there's one or two things. He goes, okay, draw up a list of 20 things you want to achieve in your lifetime. And guy draws up a list of 20 things. And it's like, okay, great. Circle the 5 most important things. So he circles the 5 most important things. And then, like, basically, he goes, oh, okay, so what are you going to do? And the pilot goes, yeah, I'm going to, like, put in a little bit more effort on the 5 things that were really important to me and everything like this. And, like, and Warren Buffett goes, no, wrong. What you're going to do is you're going to take those 5 things, put them on the separate list. The other 15, you're going to put on your bye-bye list. Because none of those other 15 things are important. The 5 things on that list are, and you put all your time, focus, and energy on those 5 and make that happen. And forget about the other 15. And like, yeah, very much along the lines you're talking about. But yeah, I think people need to sometimes have that sort of real focus and like sort of real sort of accountability to what they want to do and achieve in this world. And which, let's just say, if it was easy, if it could just happen with a snap of the fingers, everyone would damn well do it. I would snap a couple of times, but the truth of the simple fact of the matter is it's not. It's painful. It puts you into a realm of discomfort. And like, yeah, trying to maintain focus on all of that is hard. It's quite taxing. It's like, yeah, because like this is the thing, looking at yourself working as a consultant for IBM, that is you might have 8 hours sleep each night, which you're quite grateful for, but like the whole point is it's still a long hard day and sometimes it'll bleed over into the weekend. And this is the thing with YouTube as well. As much as people like go, oh yeah, it's just you put up a video, it's you da la la la, you just record your video and you upload it, and there it goes. No one talks about the thumbnails, no one talks about the keyword research, no one talks about the research of like doing everything like this. It is quite time consuming. So how do you bring that sort of balance of you being a consultant and yeah, with your like side hustle? How do you do that?
The answer is there is no balance, right? So in the sense of back to what you were saying about, you know, focusing on those 5 things. Yeah. So I can give a very concrete example with me, right? So people really understand how unconventional I really am. I'm literally having this conversation with you on the mattress that I sleep on in my mother's basement. I'm the only six-figure earner you'll ever meet in your life that still lives with his mother and will probably live with his mom until he's like 30, that doesn't own a car. All of the things I've just mentioned. I also love karaokeing in 8 different languages and dancing in my basement, all that stuff. Yeah. Why does all of that matter for this conversation? It matters because it gives you an idea on what my priority actually is. I only care about Master Talk and my family and friends, you know, put that all in the same bucket. Family, Master Talk. That's it. That's all I care about. That's all I want. You know, people like to go to the park. People like to do all this. That's great. You know, be happy. I want to do something great, right? That's what I want to do. So instead of going to another house and renting out for money I don't need to spend, I can use all of that money, spend it all on my production, get on more shows, do a bunch of more stuff, invest in better equipment, and do whatever it takes to make it work. That you only get to that place in your life once you ask yourself the hard questions. Because if you don't question anything, you'll just be normal. Right. And if you just be normal, you'll never come to a situation like this. You know, I don't buy gifts for anybody. I don't spend any money where I don't need to because I save every little morsel to make this thing work. But if you don't know what to prioritize, you're just going to do what everyone else is doing. Oh, yeah. Are people spending $1,000 on Christmas? I'm going to do the same thing. So going back to prioritization, sure, you're right. I mean, I work a lot less than I used to. You know, I sleep 8 hours a day now, but I definitely work the other 16. But I still work a good, you know, 70, 80, 90 hours a week if you add the two together. But I love it. You know, I love every second. That's what I want to do. The thing that would hurt me the most, man, is if I died and all of the information I had to share never got shared. And the interesting thing, that opportunity that I have that I need to exploit before I get married, before I have kids, before I enter that stage of my life, is I have an opportunity that Dale Carnegie didn't. Dale was a smart guy. He was born in the wrong time period of history. That's why we only have a book. We don't know how he spoke. We don't know what he sounded like. We barely even have a picture. I don't think we do. Whatever, right? We don't even know. But now, in today's age, where everybody can be a media company at a very low cost, when I die, the millions of people who need communication services, who need communication tips, can always come back to me. Because I'm the only speech coach in the industry who's democratizing all of the information for the people who can't afford me. So that mission is so important to me. That's why I write my content years in advance, right? So that as everything gets uploaded, if I get into a car accident at 27, well, the videos are still going to keep going for like 3-5 years, right? That's how far ahead I'm thinking. That's why I'm so focused, because I think of what I actually want to get done. And for you, that prior, not you specifically, the people who are listening, that priority could be, well, Brendan, you know, I want to spend 3 days with my family every week. Good. So my question to you is, why are you only spending one? Right? That's the point, right? Is you need to realign what you actually want by asking yourself the hard questions. And once you do that, you find a balance that works for you. And for me, there is no balance. And I'm fine with it. I work 10 hours a day, 12, 14 hours a day. And then I go on a nice 1 hour walk with my family. We have a good time and everyone's happy.
Excellent. Excellent. So you say you recorded years in advance. So like, what was that process like? Was it a case of you just went, okay, I've got January, where I'm not doing anything, and you just took the whole of January and you just recorded like a madman? Or how do you, like, what's the process behind that?
Yeah, so as your vision develops over time, so obviously at the beginning I was just alone in my basement with my phone, and then, you know, I got better lights and all that stuff. Yeah. But obviously over time I realized really quickly I'm very different from most YouTubers in the sense that I hate making the videos. Not the content. I like sharing the content, but the filming process around the editing and all that stuff. So I hired my best friend to do everything for me. So basically what I do is every day I write a YouTube script. So if you do that for a year, you have 365 scripts. But since I only post once a week, that's content for 7 years, right? So it's just a little bit over time. So let me correct my point. I don't record years in advance. I write years in advance. I record 1 year in advance. So I recorded all my 2020 videos in like March or something. So now I'm going to record 2021 in the next 2-3 months that I just finished writing for. I'm finishing in a couple of days. So the idea is a couple of things. So one, because of the nature of my content, I don't need another guest. I could do just me and my content. I write one script every day. So I get ideas from my audience members. Number two is I get someone to help me out with the filming process. And number three is I batch film. So whenever I meet my video guy, Danny, yeah. I don't just film two videos. I film at least five, but now because of the whole global situation that's happening, I film 20 in a day, 20 videos in a day. So when I'm done, I'm pretty much in a coma. And then I'm going to go back again, do another 20, another 20, and then I'm done for the year.
Yeah, no, because, wow, 20 videos in a day. Yeah. Doing that on a sort of myriad of different subjects, that must get slightly confusing at times.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, that's like, see the look on your face when you're like, yeah, it's tough. What am I doing to myself?
But no, because normally what I do is I usually record five and then I get lunch with them and we have a good time.
Mm.
But I don't have that option because I have to go back and forth from Montreal to where I live. And it costs like $100, $75, $50 to do the taxi back and forth. I'm not rich or anything. So I got to save all my money. So I said, Danny, if we're going to do this for a day, let's just do 20, just 20 videos, just, you know, 26, whatever. Get it done. Yeah.
Wow. No, that's hardcore. It's hardcore, but like.
But I learned, you know, back to because you did that so well, you facilitated that trajectory.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm able to do that is because of case competitions. Mm. That obsessiveness, that work ethic, that push for excellence, and a lot of people tell those stories. It's just not case competition. It's like I'm a brown belt in martial arts as well. I did that for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people that I see are very intense in the business world. Generally, have a very rigorous background. They either, you know, grew up in a low-income family and had like three jobs while studying. They did case competitions like me. They did professional sports. So a lot of the people I competed with were black belts in Taekwondo, kickboxing champions. So when they came into case competitions, they brought that work ethic. Because one thing I want to emphasize is your obsession in one thing becomes an obsession in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you're obsessed in one, and that's something. Actually, I need to write that down after this intro. It's pretty good. I was like, oh,
I printed up a t-shirt already.
So yeah. So, but it's very true. So I was super obsessed with case comp. I was like, we need to destroy the schools. We need to win. We need to be the mm-hmm. best. So when I go into Master Talk, it's like, you call this a video, but I'm talking about my own videos. You call this a video, I gotta do this better. So now, obviously, you'll probably see the progress now of what it's become.
Mm. Oh, excellent, excellent. So, with the video side of things, like, okay, I imagine this might be one stage in a grander plan. If you're able to share that, if it's not gonna compromise you anyway, but like, say, like, is there a sort of a magic number with either subscribers or sort of earnings where you like go, where you would have to sort of seriously go, okay, like, where do I put my time? Like, do I stick with like what I'm doing right now? Do I change it up? Or is there another option? Is there a magic figure for that by any chance?
No, it's a good question. So I think for me, money is definitely not a part of that equation. But I'm going to be transparent as to why. Okay, because this is coming from a guy who wanted to make $500,000 as an executive.
Hey,
it's because the money problem got solved. Here's the thing with money that most people don't get. And it took me, and I had to learn that lesson. If we divide up life into three categories, health, wealth, and relationships,
mm-hmm.
I always believed as a kid that wealth was the hardest of the three. Because it's the one thing I lacked. You know, I was like, oh, I could get a girlfriend sometimes, get easy, you know, health. I just, you know, exercise, eat some avocados and stuff. But this wealth thing, how do I like find a high paying job? I don't know anybody. I don't have the skills. But after you get the job, you put in the hours I do, you go to the right university, you get the right job, or you do something else. You become a plumber, whatever, high paying job, whatever floats your boat. The second you get your first paycheck, if you ask yourself the right question, if you don't get stuck in the rat race of spending more money, you'll realize very quickly, like I did, that money is just a tool, right? But most people don't actually, like I don't expect anybody to believe me until they have the money, right? I just want to add that as a caveat. So what happened after, I was like, okay, well, at this point, I can make the money I want to make if I just stay at this job. So for me, Master Talk is about being the biggest channel on YouTube on public speaking. Why? Not for ego, not for status. Those are great things for a young, you know, 20-year-old to have. But the main reason is because I want everybody that wants to master communication, whether they're 16-year-old Julia, you know, can't afford a speech coach, 12-year-old Nanut in like Cambodia, all of those people, I want them all to know who I am. And the only way to do that is to rank one on public speaking. Because by ranking one, like Charisma on Command has done with Charlie Hooper's work, amazing YouTube channel, with millions of subscribers. When you rank one on Charisma, you're the people, you're the person that people come to. Not for paid service. Obviously, you know, I've had success in that realm too.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I'm going to click on, right? So that's the future for me. And so that's why I do a lot of small podcast shows. I could spend the same hour and make like $300-$500 an hour with the clients that I'm serving. But I do this because I would rather reinvest that time for 10 people who can't afford me, who listen to this and go, hey, you know, actually I have a cupcake recipe I want to share to people. Maybe Brendan's got some videos for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I care about. And the long tail, the money will come, right? And the money is coming from IBM, so I don't really mind. So that's the long tail for me, is to be a bigger name than Dale was. It is time.
I have a sense you might be setting up your own Toastmasters or doing some version of the whole case study competition yourself. I have this vibe. I might be wrong, but you know what I mean?
I won't actually, it's great that you asked. I'll say that because I like your curiosity. I won't do that actually because it's not scalable.
Okay. Right?
So if you look at, so this is a good point that you brought up. Depends how many lives you want to impact. So I personally love Toastmasters. I'm a member myself, and I recommend anybody who can't afford a speech coach, which is most people, to go to Toastmasters because it's like $80 for 6 months. But the thing that I like about Toastmaster is because the structure already exists, I see myself as a complement to them. So the issue with Toastmasters is they don't have access to the best speech coaches in the world because those people coach CEOs. Whereas since I do that as well, but since I share all of the secrets for free, there's no like email opt-in or nothing. It's just the videos are there. What Toastmaster clubs can do, and I guess speak at a lot of them, is they take the videos and they bring it back into their own clubs. So that way the tips get reapplied into the club. Everyone becomes better evaluators and the quality of the people in that club increase. So that's the way that I see myself as a plug-in to the structure because I want to impact every human being who speaks English and wants to master communication, which is probably the millions. So I don't have time to build that kind of structure to answer your question there, but I love the curiosity.
Hey. Always got to be curious, my friend. Always got to be curious. Like, so, yeah. So, the future is bright. The YouTube channel is going well. You are you are prepared, ready to go to like the next stage. So, what do you do to sort of unwind, chill, relax? Because look, you're doing like, you're taking on two heavy tasks here. So what's the sort of thing you like, okay, this is what I need to do. Kick back.
You know, I wish I was as interesting as you are, Maui, and say something cool here. Oh, yeah, like I love to snowboard. It's really definitely not the case. So for me, what I do to unwind, I mostly read books and podcasts. I always want to be learning. I know this sounds crazy, but like it's just the way that I am. But another thing I like to do is I love attending events. Like I fly out to a lot of conferences to meet really cool people. Mm-hmm. So for me, my favorite pastime is having dinner with interesting people. That's what I like to do. I'm not like big on like Netflix or like all that stuff. Not to like crap on that or anything. Like I watch movies if smart people recommend me and tell me there's a lesson to learn from the movie. But most of my unwinding is having deep conversations with people. So if you ever meet me one day and you just keep it high level, it won't be a fun conversation. I'll get right into what are you passionate about? How can I help you? What are your plans? Like you just did with me. So those are the type of stuff that I like to do.
So who would be like the three people from any point in history, fantasy, who would you have like to have dinner with and have a good conversation?
Yeah, I'll do one because I really want to bring spotlight to this person. Okay. Scott Harrison. He's the CEO of Charity Water. He's a personal, someone I personally admire. I was on his launch team for his book, read his memoir. And what I like about Scott Harrison, what he's inspired in my life, and I definitely want to have dinner with him, and I plan on doing so in the next couple of years, is the following. He dedicated his whole life, probably most of it, getting people drunk. That's what he did most of his life. He was a nightclub promoter. He was one of the most successful nightclub promoters in New York City, I would argue. You know, had a ridiculous business, Rolex, BMW, Vogue, all that stuff. He was killing in all the cylinders. Then when he turned 30, he had an epiphany. And he said, I need to change my life, right? This is crazy. He looked at himself and he was disgusted by what he was looking at. Mm-hmm. So that dude, who was a nightclub performer, went from selling bottles of champagne for $500 a pop that he would buy for 50 by creating that club experience,
yeah,
to philanthropy. So he grew one of the biggest nonprofits in water and sanitation in the world by using a lot of the business acumen, the marketing acumen, the champagne that he would sell. He used that same premium feel with his organization, Charity Water. And what's interesting is that he built this whole organization on a problem that will never affect his generations. Like, none of his family will ever be affected by not having water. So I just admired the crap out of him. I think he's a really interesting dude. And I think the way that he's built, he's built the organization through storytelling and branding, it really makes you think like a company like Nike with like 1% of their budget. So it's really admirable what he's done.
You become what you consistently practice.
What happened?
No, that was like your video quickly.
Yeah.
I clicked on your channel. I was like,
like, you're like, oh.
And I was like, hello. No. Like, you definitely need to read the book called Shoe Dogs. Founder of.
I did read Shoe Dog.
Oh yeah, like that was a trying and testing time. So like,
you know what I learned from Shoe Dog? Never to drive a car.
That's what I learned. Like, what was the name of that poor chap who died in the car crash?
No, not that. Yeah, but that's Steve Prefontaine. But yeah. The reason why that was my takeaway from the book for the audience is because Phil Knight's the founder of Nike.
Yes.
And a lot of these entrepreneur-esque figures are always in their head all the time.
Mm.
So whenever they drive in the book, he talks a lot about how he kept hitting posts when he was driving, because he would think all the time about the business,
yeah,
that he wouldn't be focused on the road. And I so resonated with that. So I have my license, but I get it. I'll probably just get a taxi or something.
Oh yeah, no, I love that book because, like, yeah, so teaches you about cash flow being king, and yeah, building your team, which ultimately becomes that championship team, that people can come from the weirdest places. Like, if you think it's going to come from some cookie cutter place, you'll be mistaken. Got to say, love that book. But yes, let me just say this. Like, it has been a pleasure having you on today, Brandon. Pleasure. Could you tell people how they can find you out there?
Of course. So since since we're talking books, I always like to give a book recommendation. So you should check out Thirst by Scott Harrison. It's an excellent read. So check it out. And to reach out to me, I'm not famous like Maui over here. So feel free to send me a message on Instagram. I'm at Master Your Talk. So just message me at Master Your Talk. If you have a question, concern, complaint, I'm open to everything. Don't be shy. And if you want to check out my YouTube videos and learn all of my public speaking tips that we didn't go over today, you should check it out at Master Talk in one word.
Perfect. Brandon, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming on today, sir. It has been a pleasure and an honor. No problem. I'd like to say thank you to anyone who is still here listening to the Day In, Day Out podcast. You have been amazing. So what I'd like to say is stay well, stay focused, stay fantastic. And yeah, we'll see you again soon. Peace. Hey. And we are...